You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This episode is brought to you by the McDonald's $1-$2-$3 menu. It's hard to have a friend who's a slow eater, because when you finish your McChicken sandwich, watching them finish their McDouble cheeseburger and small fries can be excruciating. Until they notice you staring and offer up a few fries. That must be what friends are for. There's a deal for every moment on the McDonald's $1-$2-$3 menu. Get a McChicken sandwich, McDouble cheeseburger, four-piece chicken McNuggets, or small fries for just a few bucks. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any offer or combo meal.
This episode is brought to you by HP Plus. In a world full of smart devices, isn't it about time your printer got smart too? Now printing is smart with HP Plus, and the HP Smart app is how it all happens. You can print from your phone with just a tap, no matter where you are, even from your garage / home office / yoga studio. Huh, that is smart. HP Plus. Learn more about smart printing at hp.com/smart.
Hello and welcome to episode 159 of the Washed Up Emo podcast. I am Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com. Today we have a special episode of the podcast. We welcome back Dan Didier from The Promise Ring to talk about the album Very Emergency. Why you ask? Because today, September 28th, 2019, is the 20th anniversary of this album's release. It came out all the way back then in 1999 on Jade Tree Records. To that, I wanted to find a fun way to celebrate and talk about the album. So Dan and I connected earlier this week to discuss many things, including the inspiration of the album artwork, the backlash at the time, the one video that did for the record, Kim Coletta's honest opinion of the album, and also her prowess for taping NBA games on VHS. Finally, we read some reviews on the album together from Ivy Club, MTV, and Pitchfork. If you haven't, you should listen to this album now. Get a feel for it. Take an hour as Dan and I discuss, laugh, and then laugh some more about this album, time, and how much we had to go to the internet to remember things. This is episode 159 of the Washed Up Emo podcast with a very special, very emergency 20th anniversary with Dan Didier from The Promise Ring.
Dan's record from me.
So no one's reached out to anybody about Very Emergency? That's insane.
No, really. I mean, nothing I know of. I don't know if, you know, anyone else reached out to the other guys or whatever. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, without you telling me, it's Saturday or whatever you said it was.
Like, yeah, it's Saturday.
Yeah. It would just be another day. So I appreciate that you're on top of things like that.
I'm trying. So what's interesting is I read some reviews from back in the day. And did you remember the MTV interview?
Oh, God, yeah.
And the review. The review is, like, super favorable.
Like, on air? Or?
No, they, like, wrote something. They, like, wrote an article.
On what? I don't know. Were websites around back then?
Yeah, 1999. The headline is Polished Power Pop. Melodic rock that's at its best blasting from a car stereo.
Well, that sums it up.
That sums it up.
I'll talk to you later, Tom.
But what's great is it references a link to Happiness is All the Rage, and it's a real audio excerpt. So that's when you know it's 1999.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So very, very good review. It was basically saying, I will read the I will read the last part, and then we can get into the questions. Although the very word pop has come to take on an almost derogatory meaning in indie rock circles, Von Bohlen clearly isn't afraid to wear his top 40 influences on his sleeve, and this record is a shining testament to that. It's enough to make one think that modest but heartfelt records such as Very Emergency might actually come within striking distance of the top 40 someday, but that might be too much to hope for. Holy shit.
Wow. I don't remember that. I don't remember much about I remember that, like, people being the forebearer of Very Emergency came from Kim Coletta when she listened to the record, you know, because we recorded it in DC with Jay Robbins and you know, whatever we said, gave her in advance, you know, the rough mix or whatever. And you know, she made this big comment about, oh, there's no, you know, she wanted like another Nothing Feels Good, or at least that's what her reaction was. He's like, oh, this is totally different, and it's not, you know, like there's no, what was the word she said? Like that, not drama, but not dynamics or something like that. She's like, there's not a lot of dynamics in that, like, you know, whatever. And so I said, it was sort of like, yeah, well, that was sort of the point, you know, for that record at least. So I'm shocked that, because it seemed like that was like people either had a negative reaction or a very favorable. So like, you know, you're like sort of on the Kim Coletta side, or if you're on the MTV side, apparently.
Wow.
That record being like, you know, like it's, you know, it's fine.
I mean, initially it was seen as like a sellout record.
Is that exactly? That's what I think. That's sort of what which is weird because I never really felt that. But, I mean, I could like having conversations with people and be like, you know, but I guess it was just because our intention was always super clear. That to me, it didn't seem that way. It's just like, well, no, this is just what we're doing. So it feels totally natural because this is what we're doing. We're not like, it's not contrived in a way, or it's just like, this is what we want to do. This is what we're doing. So we're just going to do it. You know, you know, like we didn't really have like a, yeah, I don't know.
Going into it, did you feel that? Did you feel, okay, I think people are going to see this differently. Let's say before the record, like you're making it like, positive, and you seem very determined. Was there any thoughts of like, are people gonna think about this a certain way, or was it like, this is just what we're doing?
I had no like preconceived notion of like people's reactions to it that I recall. Like, I don't remember ever being like, whoa, guys, whoa, what are we doing? You know, like we should, you know. Whereas Nothing Feels Good Part Two, like, you know, it was never that. It was just like, holy shit, like we're starting to write these type of things and we all are really enjoying them, you know, and the other music that we have been listening to, you know, is what we want to make, you know.
What was in your head at the time?
So I feel like there's a couple of, for me, there's a couple things that sort of, And you know, think when you said, hey, I'm gonna, you know, talk to you about this, and then that got me to thinking, oh, I should actually think about the record. And what I thought about it was there was two sort of things that happened, which is kind of funny now that I've never really thought about it until now. There's two sort of things that happened with the band that may have changed our thought process for the next record, you know. And the one was in the van accident in 98.
Mm-hmm.
When did this record come out? 99.
Yeah.
So that's chronological. That totally makes sense. It was like, I think with us, it's like every time we got out of the rut and we were forced to take a break or forced to slow down, we reimagined or thought about or had time to consider what we wanted to do. And I felt like you know, the same thing happened then with Woodwater, with Ben Davies' tumor and that situation. You know, so that was like another kind of event in the band that sort of like made us stop, got us, you know, got us out of the tour, record, you know, right sort of wheel, spinning wheel. You know, so I felt like, so, you know, maybe there's something to that where, you know, we had this, you know, crazy accident where we all miraculously survived. And maybe then that sort of, you know, sort of made our outlook maybe different. I don't know. And then the other thing was when we did, again, you know, from drummer perspective, I feel like this has to be fall into chronology, is that we did the Pixies cover of Gouge Away for Pixies cover come. And I feel like us playing Gouge Away and covering Gouge Away and recording Gouge Away and playing that song, I think that if there's anything that really influenced the Emergency, and I could be totally wrong, the chronological order could be wrong, but I don't think it is. Because I remember kind of going into, the recording and the writing of that album and those songs being like, like David Loveland's drums on Gouge Away is, and in most of the Pixie songs are brilliant because they're powerful and simple and, you know, and that's, you know, awesome. And so like, just again, getting out of your element, doing something that you're, you know, taking yourself out of the rut of, I'm just going to write what I write, you know, but actually playing a song that somebody else's part, you know, playing somebody else's part on a song, you know, kind of changed at least the way I thought about playing, which I, again, wouldn't have thought of unless you didn't tell me, I'm going to call you tonight and, you know, like, oh, I should think about this. I think those, at least for me, those two things might have, you know, and then we were listening to other, like, more pop music too, that obviously helped, I guess, you know, because we were just trying to emulate the stuff that we liked. And then we wrote those parts into a song and released it as an album, you know.
I think listening back to, and I mean, even the little EP before, you know, Tell Everyone We're Dead, you kind of hear that it's sort of breaking up. You hear the Nothing Feels Good breaking up and it kind of coagulating. And, you know, I think when people listen back, and I want to go through a few of the songs, but you can hear there are slow songs. There are, you know, there are songs that sound like Nothing Feels Good. There are things that you can. So I don't know. For someone to just be like, oh, it's 35 minutes and it's just like simple songs. And, you know, it didn't feel like that when you listened to it deeper.
Okay. So I remember some of it was kind of, I mean, maybe not before, but sort of certainly after, and while we were like working on it, there was a little bit of calculation, because I remember having a conversation about what should be on the album and what shouldn't, even though I think we probably recorded 12, 11, I don't know. And we were talking about the album and we were thinking like, there's no way that this album can have more than 10 songs. And there's no way that this can sort of, you know, like, and so when I looked, I'm like, oh yeah, how long is that album? And then it was like, what, 35 minutes or whatever?
35 minutes, yeah.
I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, it's like, again, thinking back at it, like that was kind of completely calculated, because like the typical pop song is about 3.5 minutes. We have a 10 song album that's 35 minutes. You divide that, the average length of song is 3.5. You know, like there's
right.
a sort of certain calculation in that, whether it was intended or not, or if it just sort of happened that way. But it's sort of like, you know, like there was a point to that record, and we certainly made it, you know, being, you know, kind of straightforward, stripped down, straight ahead, no frills, you know, get to the chorus, you know, like there's a,
yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, Petty was like that, you know, like, don't bore us, get to the chorus. And I think you saying the, you know, the van accident, having that moment where you look back and, cool, everything could have been done. Let's do what we want, or we're thinking about something differently. And also you're riding that high of nothing feels good, all that press, like people. But again, I think people forget, like, you talk about it in the Jawbreaker doc of, like, you know, this band got taken down, you know, for doing something like, you know, a major label. You guys are on Jade Tree, and still it wasn't like it was on Atlantic or like Sony or something. Like, you were making a super pop record that hopefully more people were going to hear. And I don't know, everybody wanted Nothing Feels Good too. And I think, I guess that's as old as time. But you're right, it's the stuff you were into, some major shit happened, and I think you're at a point where you could have done that. That was the point to do what you wanted. It wasn't like you were trying to impress anybody at that point.
No, and you know, and I guess, of course, like with the sort of success, you know, I mean, again, we talk about success, like we sold a million records. We really did it. But the sort of, you know, hindsight success, I guess, of that record. But I mean, but, you know, we could, you know, well, of course, living in Milwaukee in a, you know, very cost of living is very low. You could live on what, and I did live on what the band was making on the road and royalties, and, you know, but again, compared to,
right,
you know, whatever. So with this you know, so-called success with Nothing Feel Good, I mean, we did have a sort of moxie, right, about us on CEO. Like, you know, it could be, you know, like, oh, we can do whatever the fuck we want, maybe. Like, that could have been part of it, too. Just like, fuck it, let's just do a pop record because that's what we want to do. And, you know, of course, everyone's going to fuck it, love it. But, you know, obviously that, you know, not necessarily true, but, you know, that idea of, like, you know.
That makes sense. I mean, what was it like working with Jay?
Jay was great. I mean, he's the kindest, biggest sweetheart. But I remember sending him the drum sounds. I just sent him like a tape of something. Like, okay, you know, of course, some Pixie songs were on there, and you know, a lot of like drum sounds that I really liked. I sort of sent him a tape of, like, you know, before we, you know, got to DC, we're like, can we get some of this type of. I think the drum should be like this. And so he was super open to that. And, you know, he was just there to do whatever it takes to get the best out of you. You know, cause we've, and so it was fun working with him too, with, you know, cause obviously he did Nothing Feels Good as well. So to have him on board with us doing this record was great, because he was like, yeah, awesome. Yeah. Okay. You want that sound, you want that feel. Okay. We're going to get that, you know? So working with him has always been great.
That's interesting. You mentioned sounds, because I think when I listen back at your discography, like, this one and Woodwater stick out as the brightest to me. And I don't know if that's what you think, but, like, I hearing Very Emergency today is very similar to then. And I think it sounds just as, you know, it sounds great. It sounds, doesn't seem like the 90s. Have you listened to it that way? Cause I know you guys remastered it not long ago.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, in all honesty, I don't think I've listened back to it. So I don't know, but I could, I remember it being a very, bright, loud, you know, like all that. That's all of this, what we wanted from that record. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we were sent test presses and stuff of the remastered, you know, and I don't know. I didn't really. I'm sure it sounds great. Approved. I'm not too. Somebody must have listened to it.
Somebody must have. But I think that was a conscious thing, and I think I remember getting it and feeling that, oh wow, this sounds great, this sounds bigger, and I kind of, you know, it was definitely taking a swing, and I think at that point with you guys, like, what else were you supposed to do? That, what else were you guys going to do at that point? Like, you're going to try and swing and be a bigger band. Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
Yeah, but that makes us feel, it sort of seems like it's, yeah, that's an interesting point, because that makes it seem like, yeah, we're purposely trying to make it big, which of course, with the success of Nothing Feels Good, again, in quote success. I guess that was maybe a part of it, but it wasn't like us like going for the brass ring, you know, like, I don't know. I guess I don't necessarily remember that. Like, I always thought, well, if that happens, he should be the song that it happens to. Here's, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Talk about the video, Emergency, Emergency. Do you remember it at all?
Yes, that was shot in my flat in Milwaukee. Part of it was like our performance part was shot in where I was living. And then the other part where my girlfriend at the time, now wife, lived. Yeah, so yeah, I remember that. Darren Doan directed it. So, and my brother helped sort of script it out. So like me and my brother kind of like came up with the idea. We sent it to Darren. And he's like, okay, yeah, let's do it. I'm coming to Milwaukee. I'm like, all right. And then we shot it.
Wow.
It's kind of goofy. It's a goofy.
I like it. I think there's the weirdo, there's the girl that's getting stalked, and then the milkman's weird. I like it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. But it's just all of like all of our friends, you know, like Josh Modell is the milkman, which is sort of a reference to the magazine that he did called Milk in Milwaukee, which was like the glue that held all musicians together. I felt like for a certain time, like everyone, like that magazine was, and what he was doing promoting shows, and him and James Minor, were like, you know, that was a very important magazine. So him being a milkman was kind of a nod to that. Was that the video? It must've been the video with Michael D and David Kay in it from, if I remember correctly, right? Is that that video?
I think so.
There's like a close up of a magazine called a reference to our other song. Reference, the magazine was called Best Looking Boys, and we pan out and it's the actual Michael D and David Kay, Dave Kaczynski and Mike Shambeck, who's Scott Shambeck's brother, and was our tour manager for some time. Yeah. Okay. So that is that video. Yeah. So, you know, we're it's sort of like all these sort of self-referential kind of little Easter eggs, I guess.
Yeah.
In that video.
Are there any others that you remember?
Like Jared Duris was the quote unquote creepy guy. He's a brother of one of my best friends, John. And then the girl is Kara, who Danny, my wife, girlfriend at the time, was rooming with. No, not at that time, but at one point was rooming with her. So it was just like, you know.
All hands on deck.
Yeah. It was like, who can we get? Who do we know? Who do we, you know?
Do you remember how much it was?
No. I mean, I think it was very little. If anything.
How much did Doan take you for? Like 10? 10, 15?
God, no. 2? I mean, it was like so low.
Wow.
It was like film stock. It was like film stock and like an ice cream sandwich, maybe? It really was really, I don't remember ever, like, I don't remember being like, whoa, you know, it was so expensive to make. Like, it really, really, really wasn't.
Right.
That I remember.
What's the ice cream in Milwaukee that everybody has? The custard, right?
Custard, yeah, frozen custard.
So you gave film stock and frozen custard. That's what you did.
Frozen custard, yeah. I took them to Chops. This is like the frozen custard spot that everyone goes to. We just treated them to that.
And you don't have a copy of this video anywhere, correct? Neither does Jade Tree?
I think I do. In my magical Tupperware box.
The one that I haven't been able to get you to open, but it's in there.
Yeah. I think so. I think there's a VHS copy.
Really? There's no like legit copy?
Like a digital copy?
Yeah.
Like master? I don't think I have a master. I think it was, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't have like a beta or like a, you know, whatever.
Damn.
I think it was always like that VHS release that I remember.
Right. The version on YouTube is from Blank TV, and it's an okay version. I was just hoping that there's a better one lying around somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's certainly not on DVD or anything.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know where like the master tape is. Maybe J-Tree, because they would have it, maybe, but I don't know where that would be now. And at no point was they're like, hey, we have your master tapes of videos. Like, do you want them? Like, I don't remember ever having that conversation.
Right. See, that's what happens in 20 years. That's what happens.
You're right. Yeah, that's totally right. Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine, like, you know, like asking Jason for the original artwork.
We actually had an issue with that at work, where the original files for an album 20 years ago was on Quark. And they had to like find a version of a computer that could open. I mean, it was a process. So isn't that crazy that it was only 20 years, but that whatever Jason designed on is probably obsolete. So I guess we're on the topic of that. Like, who was the idea around the album, which is now, I think, iconic to some regard, which people emulate and use. But I know Jason would, you know, speak to it, but anything you remember from the artwork?
That was, I mean, you know, let's just call it spade a spade. That was 100% influenced by Rushmore, the Wes Anderson film of Rushmore.
Oh, like, right.
Everything about it, like, Jason saw that movie, he loved that movie, and he was like, this is what it's going to be. We're all going to be different characters. We're all going to kind of dress up, and we're all going to be, So we're like, that's a great idea. I regret, you know, growing my hair out, that's for sure. That is a train wreck, you know. I have to blame Beck mutations for
growing their hair out.
Yeah, because Beck has such a great hair.
He does.
Am I right?
He does. He's great hair.
I know I'm not wrong. Beck has great hair. So I was like, oh, I can do that, you know. But you know, not knowing that, you know, Beck, you know, flies a hairstylist out. So I don't have that. I don't have that sort of means. Or didn't, and so on. But, you know, so I just had that, whatever was on that album forever.
I love that you remember your hair about it. Like, you're just like, before you even talk about the artwork, you're like, yeah, so Jason had an idea about Rushmore, but my hair sucks.
Can you believe me? But no, it was fun because we had, you know, Paul Coog is the cover. We have, you know, I believe Tim Kinsella is in there.
Oh, right.
You know, yeah. So it's everything is, you know, we sort of self-referential, or, you know, we had, you know, the sort of, you know, bond we had with Joan of Arc, you know, at that time. You know, being, you know, on tour with them all the time, and just, you know, being friends, and you know, we always, and I think, yeah, Jason was living in Chicago at the time. He must have, yeah. You know, so we've just been around. So I remember going to wherever Tim would be living, I think, is where the photo shoot happened, and then, yeah.
So yeah, who's on the cover again?
Paul Koob.
Oh.
K-O-O-B.
Right.
He's just a friend of Tim Sellers and all those Chicago people. So.
Is he a bus driver?
He's not. And I certainly don't know. I haven't really kept up with him, so I don't really know what he does.
No, the cover. I mean, like, who is he on the cover?
Yeah, I thought you were, like, being funny, like, oh, what is he? No, he is a bus driver. No, chauffeur.
Chauffeur. Okay.
Chauffeur. Yeah.
I almost kept you going with that for a minute, and I was like, no, I got to stop this.
Yeah.
Like,
I think I confused Dan. Yeah. You don't know what everyone in your life has been, you know, the past 20 years have been doing. So the idea is that it's all sort of part of our personality. So, why Tim Kinsella is a priest, you know, that was probably, you know, but it kind of makes sense. Paul Krug, the chauffeur, I was an architect. Jason was kind of the Rushmore character, kind of like the hopeless romantic.
Right.
Davey's obviously sports. Scott, is he businessman?
I don't know.
And then there's a bunny. There is a bunny. I can't remember who put the bunny mask on. Yeah. But I should, I feel like Scott was like a business guy. Maybe he had a briefcase. Or did I have the briefcase? I know I had like rolled up pieces of paper to make it look like I had blueprints.
Right.
That's such fun.
That's fun. Now, was that the same record cycle tour that you had the sports shirts?
I wouldn't put it past us.
Do you remember those?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Those were like each size. Yeah. Had a different member.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all had chose our different numbers. I remember because, every time I see Zach, Lind, when Jimmy Will comes through town, I, you know, try to go see them and say hi. And he always brings up, I still got my Didio shirt. And, kind of like drummer camaraderie. And I remember during the 2012, reunion tour that we were playing, our friend, owns a bar and he has like a street party, so we played that on that part of that reunion cycle, and my dad showed up wearing that shirt, and I remember Davey calling him out and being like, you know, turn around, he, you know, and of course he had Diddy on the back, like, so like, those are my two memories of those shirts. But that had to have been because we had the foam fingers. We did like foam fingers, like number one.
Tell me you still have one of those.
Yeah, my dad, surprisingly, my dad still has one, I believe.
You got to take a photo of it when you see him.
We might have one it might have like moved through the different practice spaces and studios.
Right.
Gosh, over the years. So I mean, there's one somewhere, but to tell you what though, it sounds like a great idea. But the boxes that foam fingers come in, and because they're foam, they take up so much space. Like it was just like, you know, 25 of those foam fingers takes up a lot of space because they're foam and they're big and it's awkward. And
so like Scott couldn't find a place to sit because you had 25 foam fingers.
Yeah, that's like sort of what it was. Like we had these big, like, you know. And we always toured in a lofted van. We never brought a trailer, you know, or anything like that. So it was always like whatever fit underneath the loft is what, you know, is what sort of makes it, you know. So it was just sort of like, yeah. I just remember that, like, great idea. Oh my God, it's so genius. Yeah, foam fingers. Yeah, you know, awesome idea. Sports team, you know, whatever. And until you, like, have to pack those.
Yeah, and until you're just outside of Akron, and you're like, God damn it, this sucks.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's a great. What's interesting, you mentioned Zach, is I was looking through some photos from Paul Drake, and there's a bunch of them with Zach wearing the shirt.
Oh, awesome.
So.
Yeah, he likes that shirt.
I still have mine.
Nice.
I have Jason's because right, I think he, I have Jason because he was a medium.
Did you use what?
Wasn't Jason's the medium size?
Well, I mean, I think we did them all in all different sizes.
Really? I mean, okay, so I thought when I got mine, because I thought you couldn't pick. I thought it was, oh, maybe I was just handed one because I was like, oh, I must have gotten the medium.
It might have been because of, like, we didn't want to, you know, I mean, this is, again, probably not the case, but, you know, like, we were so swamped at the merchandise table after we played. We couldn't bother with having people choose what shirt they get. You know?
That's probably it.
I don't think that's the case, but I think it was some sort of ease of like, here's a shirt, get out of here.
Hey kid, I'll talk to you in like 20 years. All right, get out of here.
Yeah, do a podcast.
Yeah. Dork, get out of here. Well, welcome back. Well, the other funny part of the when I got that shirt, the only other memory I have of that is, I've told you this before, but it's worth mentioning, is I asked Blake Schwarzenbach where Davey was because I didn't know who Blake Schwarzenbach looked like or Davey because it was before the internet. And I just remember my friend being like, you fucking asshole. You just asked Blake where somebody was. Like, I don't know who he was. It was funny.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I was oblivious. No,
that was always the joke. It was like any other member and even the other members of Just Brazil on that tour, we all had that sort of joke where we would, you know, like pretend we're a fan and just like try to make small talk. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Where's he? It's like it always, like, question always ends up like, I don't know, man.
I don't know.
It's a
man.
Small club. It's a small club. I'm sure you can find it, but I don't know where it is. But yeah, no, it's just like, yeah, just totally. That question was asked numerous times to
anybody.
Every other member of the band. Same thing with Jet. Like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah, good job on drums. Yeah. But where's Blake? You know, like, Chris Daly had to deal with that. I mean, it's always.
No. But I think what's weird is I asked Blake where somebody was, not knowing he was Blake.
Yeah. I mean, that's like meta. Like, that's a deep, like a deep, you know.
I'm sure he still thinks about it a lot.
I'm sure he did.
I want to talk about some of the songs. And I think I want to start out with the Dark Horse, which Arms and Dangers. Mm-hmm. I think this could have fit on Nothing Feels Good. I think this could have fit on a record after. I feel like it starts a little slow and then it picks up and then doesn't stop. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that song. Is that the I Was Born in 1968?
Oh, I'm bad with lyrics.
I Was Born to Replace Bobby Kennedy. What song is that?
Wait, hold on.
Arms in Danger? I got to pull up my phone.
Yeah, you. No one could be happier than you. That's how it starts.
Yeah. So yes, we wrote these pop songs, and yes, they're, you know, that, you know, 20 years on, you know, which short pop song are you talking about?
I'll go to another song.
Let me see though. I'm gonna.
You can totally pull it up. Remember, because we can edit.
No. Is it Arms and Danger or Arms and Dangerous?
No, Arms and Danger. Sorry, not Dangers. Arms and Danger.
Oh, there it is. Arms and Danger.
So if you want to try the remastered one, so you can finally listen to it, you can try that.
Yeah. Maybe I'll do that. Hold on. I'm gonna pause it. Does it come? Yeah. Here's the lyrics. Yes. Okay, this is the song. I was born in 1968 to replace Bobby Kennedy. Okay, so, yeah. Not to call him out, but, you know, that's it's a reference to our bass player at the time. not to call out his age, but this I remember that when people ask, how old is he? Well, again, it was like every, upon reflection, Davey's lyrics can obviously stand for themselves, and they're super good. And that one of the things about how well they were crafted is that I always appreciated the sort of self-referential sort of this ties into that, or remember this line from that song? Well, I'm going to reuse it this song, but change it with this. That was always super smart to me, and so I always liked those little tidbits that was a kind of go back to the Easter eggs of the lyrics of the songs.
Yeah, and I feel like that.
And that was one of.
Yeah, and that's one of. I feel like what's cool about the lyrics and you referencing that is that I have a tough time with lyric. I obviously forgot the first line of that song earlier, but his songs, like it was almost like he was letting you in on something while he was singing, if that makes sense. Like I felt like it was personal, and it wasn't the usual I'm feeling this way. It was like a little joke line and then a serious line and then a reference, and it kind of didn't make sense, but I guess when you thought about it or you got the other references, it did make sense. Is that how you would perceive it?
Yeah. I mean, there's always there's sort of a certain story being told, but within that story, there's other parts to it. A metaphor here, a reference here. I don't know if it was always like the attempt of him to sort of outwit himself, I think it was very mindful of the lyrics. Obviously he took that very seriously, and he was very thoughtful about it. And I think that sort of care in what he did with those lyrics, I think, is what obviously makes it what it is.
Yeah, and then All of My Everythings, is that where he says everybody's band name and like says something cute about him? Which one was that? Was that All of My Everythings or Things Just Getting Good?
Things Just Getting Good.
It was Things Just Getting Good. Right.
Yeah.
I liked how those ended each side.
Again, very intentional. it's like we try to make this album as straightforward and sort of like, here's a bunch of pop songs. It's the end of the side. That's where let's take a break. Let's reflect. Here's a slow jam. Flip it over. Here we go again. And then oh, it's the end of the album. Let's slow down and reflect. So So I'm pulling up those lyrics, but I don't. Wait, no, it isn't that. Maybe it is that other one.
Is it the other one?
It's the other one. I'm gonna
totally play it if you want.
What's the other one? I was just looking up the lyrics. This is a great thing about Apple Music, and that they kind of have lyrics for most of the songs. All of My Everythings. Maybe not, though. I don't think this is the song either, but it has to be.
I'm listening right now.
No, it's not it. This is a good... I like this song. I like it, not only because the drums started, but...
I don't think I've ever seen you guys play that.
I don't think we ever did.
Because I was thinking about that when I was listening back. I was like, I would have fucking loved this at the end with like the encore or something. just.
Yeah.
But I don't think you guys ever did.
No, I don't remember. I mean, we may have, but we never did like a, record start to finish.
Right.
This album.
Well, 20th is coming up. I'm kidding.
Yeah, let's get something by Saturday. Get the gang back together.
Davey, how are you? Jason, fly in. I know you're in like some form, some exotic beach, but
yeah, right.
His Instagrams are amazing.
Oh my God. Oh, they're genius. Completely.
It's like, oh, I'm designing this house and, oh, look, I'm in Cabo.
Yeah, right. I'm on a boat.
I'm on a boat, right. Was there guest vocals on Skips a Beat?
Yeah, Jenny Toomey.
Who's that?
From Licorice. And we see, she's probably in other bands and I don't remember, but she was in bands. That right, I'm pulling her up. Wikipedia. Let's do this.
You know what, Dan? What's great about this? We've hit a point where this isn't just like memories. Like, oh, it's the 10-year. Let me just think back and remember. And no, it's like, hey, do you have a second? Because I need to look up Google real quick.
Yeah, right.
We're at that anniversary.
She was in Tsunami and in this other band called Licorice. So. Yeah, so that was bands that we liked at the time, and she agreed to sing.
Nice.
Which is great.
Was there any other guest performances, things that people wouldn't know?
I feel like there... No, that was that was Glass Floor, because we recorded that, and it was part of it at Inner Ear, too, and we had some guests, but...
There's a note on the wiki about Ryan Weber playing piano.
Ryan Weber?
Weber.
Where? On what? Is there an agency?
It's on wiki. I will happily take it down if that's not true.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know either.
For this album? This is fun. This is a fun game we're playing.
That's what wiki says.
I think it's a guy knew him back then. I mean, because he ended up, it's just the same. Let me see what you're saying.
Let's take this down.
He became the bass player after Scott.
Right.
So this, but that timeline does not line up. Personnel, is that what you're looking
at? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not right.
And also, you need your own wiki page. We need the maritime stuff in there. We need the producer credit stuff in there.
Yeah, I don't see. Yeah, that's not true. That's not true. See, look at the debunking of the myths of this album.
Right, because the internet's going to say, "Oh yeah, Ryan played piano on it forever." I'm going to try to edit this right now.
Yeah.
Let's see. Content. Your.
I think that's the maritime record that I'm thinking of, a piano player. But
we can wait before I edit.
I mean, I don't know. I did some of the keyboards and piano stuff, so I might have done it, or
right.
Jay might have done it. I don't remember. I don't think we actually brought somebody else in that I could remember. And sadly, if somebody did, especially if they just happen to have the same name as our future bass player, that would I probably would have remembered that.
Right.
But yeah.
The other interesting thing is the Pitchfork review. Do you remember anything about that before I tell you?
Oh yes, I do. That's I do remember, because I remember Tim Edwards. When we were one of the reunion cycles that we did, brought that up in the way back machine or whatever the internet archive thing, you know, and wow, was that interesting? You should I don't know, link to it or something.
I have the way back machine up. But do you remember the score? Do you remember the rating?
I don't remember the rating.
8.2,
and that's the review they gave. I thought the review was like terrible.
Exactly. I mean, it's like such a condescending review, yet it's an 8.2.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, you know. Yeah. Yeah. I just remember. Yeah, just it was just weirdly written.
It's weirdly written. I will read the last paragraph because it'll tease everybody to go. Promising signs for full recovery include Fountains of Wayne Weezer emulation, figure eight skips a beat over you, and successful resolution of relapsed emo tendencies with new pop paradigm, figure three, the Deep South. Additionally, subject's exhibition of ballad-like behaviors, figure five, things just getting good, figure 10, all of my everythings, is consistent and comparable with past performance. Conclusions. Results are still inclusive. Projections for full recovery remain at 82% for the time being. Nick Morov, November 1st, 1999.
It's poetry.
It's so weird. But that era,
it was the Wild West.
Yeah.
My friend, you could write whatever you wanted. There was no rules.
So good. So we'll link so everybody can enjoy the whole thing.
Link it or something, because it's weird. Like, it was like this record was like a weird experiment. So it was written as if it was an experiment or something. Yeah.
Do you remember that review? Like, then did it help?
No.
Did you know?
No,
right?
I don't know. If it wasn't like in the Denver Chronicle or something, when you're on tour and you're like, did the weekly. I apologize for anyone in Denver that isn't the name of your weekly magazine. I apologize because I just made it up. It should be maybe, but you know, like those weekly magazines that you get, you look in it when you're on tour and it's like, oh, did they mention our show? You know,
right?
Did they review the record? Is there a write up? Is this what we did an interview for last week? You know, whatever. So that was my knowledge, because we're gone all the time, like the immediate access on the road to the internet, necessarily. And if we weren't certainly going to Pitchfork to read our review at that time.
Yeah. So
yeah, I don't remember. I didn't even think Pitchfork was around back then, but apparently it was.
Do you remember the AV Club review
for that record?
Yeah.
No. Who wrote it? Did Josh do it?
Let's see who wrote it. Stephen Thompson.
Oh, sure.
But what's interesting is it was filed in 2002.
That was the writer? What?
It was posted in 2002, not around the record.
Not 99. They're busy. They
got a lot of records. But it was interesting. Do you mind me reading a passage from it?
Sure.
Let's see. Where do I want to start? Very Emergency is a far cry from its more intense predecessor, 1997, Nothing Feels Good, which is fine. Which is what you never want to hear from your wife or girlfriend. It's fine. The Promise Ring certainly isn't... that was me interjecting. That's not part of the review. Okay, continuing on. The Promise Ring certainly isn't contractually obligated to make the same great record over and over. It's not on a major label, remember? And its approach to big catchy pop is admirable. The problem is more with spotty execution than faulty goals. Emergency has a mild wide chorus that's hard to resist. Happy Hour is a great rock anthem, and Skips a Beat Over You is cheesy in the best possible way. But too much of Very Emergency's scant 35-minute running time is dragged down by plotting overlong misfires. Holy shit. All of my everythings, this thing's just getting good, and awkward feel-good fluff. Happiness is all the rage. The Promise Ring is free to do whatever it wants, but when it only puts 10 songs on a record, it might want to pursue consistency more rigorously. Woo! Hot take!
I'm fine with that. That's a good review. That's true. I could see that. That's the decisiveness of that this record caused, So
that's it. Like, that was that, what are they doing? You guys just made this record we love. What are you doing?
There's enough of their old stuff. There's enough, there's new stuff. I see what they're doing. You know, it's like, you know, what, you know, whether they like it or not, they certainly recognize, you know, our intent.
You know, playing the album since then on the reunion tours, playing this record, any things that have stuck with you or anything that you've thought about since or had different thoughts or even maybe even the same about this record? I know it's just overall, like, even before I said, hey, we're talking later.
Yeah, no, I mean, overall, the playing these songs is fucking fun. I mean, it's super fun. It's a very fun to play. That's what I remember is, you know, looking forward to the very emergency songs on the set list. You know, because you're like, you know, they're just really fun to play. Not, other songs are fun to play too, but I mean, there's something just, there's a certain vibe to those songs that, I don't know, I always enjoyed playing.
Cool.
Because you know, purposely simple, and you could play them very loud, and you can't play them loud enough, and it, you know, could, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's, I mean, for me, that's what I enjoy about playing drums, and that sort of, that record encapsulated that feeling I get, you know, with that instrument.
That's perfect. Cool. That was my questions.
Oh, nice. Oh, painless.
Come on, Dan.
I do remember one thing though. I didn't want to, like, you know, badmouth Kim Coletta at all, because she's a super sweetheart, and she's, but what I loved about her the most is that she was honest and sometimes brutally so, but you know, because even early on, she was like almost like a de facto manager for us. Like, you know, Gigi wasn't technically, you know, but she was a super helpful resource to us to guide us, you know, early on, you know, and to help us out. Like, she was invaluable. She was also invaluable when we were recording Very Emergency at Inner Ear, because the NBA playoffs were happening, but we were recording, and, you know, like, we couldn't, like, the TV at the studio didn't really work or whatever. So she would go home and tape games for us. And then still we would be on like a tape delay a full day. So she would come to the studio with these tapes of basketball games that then we would just like watch the next day to get caught up. And we try to ignore newspapers and you know, whatever, because then, you know, whatever, we were just focused on the record. But, you know, if we had a, you know, just have that sort of playing and sort of check in on how it is. Yeah. So, I mean, she was brutally honest with her take on the album, but in no way does that, you know, I totally appreciated that sentiment. But I also don't want to have her come off like that, like, have any ill will or anything, because she's a super sweet. And was, you know, but yeah, no, that was another thing when, you know, kind of thinking back on that recording process. I remember that, and it was sort of like this super sweetheart thing for her to do. Like, you know, what a weird thing to ask.
That's amazing, because that wasn't as easy as pressing the button. There was some maneuvering and work involved.
Yeah, and that takes up like a whole TV and a whole hours of just this TV having to be on and taping on this tape. VHS tape, you know, game, and then, you know, and she'd come to the studio and sort of like swap tapes. Oh, we watched this game. Thank you. Here's the old tape. Here. Oh, this is the new one. Awesome. Thanks. And we just sort of like switch back and forth.
What games were on that? What teams were playing?
Oh, come on, I knew you were gonna ask.
Wait, we can look it up because we have the internet. What? What? You, yeah. So is this late? Is this summer of 99?
Well, it might have been 90. when it was, oh yeah, because it was released, October 4th?
September 28th.
December 10th, okay.
So was this Knicks Spurs? Actually, that lines up because.
Yes, it was. Yeah, because I know Mike Shambeck was a big Knicks fan. So that sort of lines up. And then, you know, and he might have even been there. I have no idea. Maybe he was at the studio with us, or maybe it wasn't. But I remember maybe just because he said they were Knicks, I know he was a big fan. I also sort of remember the Sixers, but that doesn't, but maybe that was.
The Knicks, Knicks beat the Pacers in the Eastern Finals. Spurs beat the Trailblazers 4-0 in the Western Finals. Okay. But I forgot that this season was a shortened season.
That's right. That was a weird season.
Because, look, their record, the Knicks were the eighth seed. So there was the eighth seed getting to the final. They were 27-23.
That's crazy. Yeah, that was weird.
I did not remember that. That's why we have the internet, Dan. It's okay. That's why we can check.
Internet will talk for me.
I mean, we found out that Ryan Weber didn't play piano. We found out the lyrics to a song we both forgot.
The band Jenny Toomey was in. Yeah, I mean, it's a wonder machine.
Seriously. Guys, the trick to podcasting, have the internet open.
Well, maybe we can find out what Paul Koob does now.
Yes, seriously. Hey, Dan, is he a bus driver? Like, I don't know, Tom.
Yeah, he's the Green Line.
Nice.
He's got to be on LinkedIn.
Are you gonna look him up right now? See if he's a bus driver.
Yeah. I'm linking. I'm linking in.
You're linking in. Okay.
He's got to be up. This kind of stands up. I think he's a graphic designer.
Wow.
Yep. You want to deliver? Yep. In Greater Denver area. So maybe he designed for the
Denver Weekly. Chronicle. No, Denver Chronicle.
That's the Denver Weekly.
As he shakes his head at you right now.
Yeah. Sorry, Paul.
Davey, oh Davey, don't tell me that.